Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Oh, well, I guess I should have used that mute button. Sorry about that, folks. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with my buddy Russ Cortinel. We survive another week, Rusty, and it's another show of The Suspendables. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Russ, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good.
Oh, really good? What's up?
Yeah,
I
miss you. I couldn't do the show last week because we didn't have power, so I feel like we've had a little bit of a separation, and sometimes separation's a good thing.
It's not our lucky love affair. Yeah, not our usual love affair. I'll tell you what, you maybe don't want to miss any shows. There was a power outage down in Sherwood Forest, as we like to call it, where you live.
For 2 days.
Utopia is what I like to call it. heaven, something like that. And we'd set up Kirk McLean to come on, and of course he did last week. And you got to be careful, Russ. You don't want to miss too many shows because
he was
absolutely...
Yeah, I heard he was great.
Fantastic. He was absolutely fantastic. And I was like, you know what a bad listener I am and how often when we do this show that we have to stop down. Which means we stop recording. And I got to say, I'm sorry, Russ. What were you talking about there? I was going over. I'm trying to think of what I'm going to say next and all that jazz. And but he was really engaging. Really engaging. Great guy. Really well-spoken. Fantastic career, of course. And one of your best friends, you said.
Yeah, one of my top five friends in the, in the hockey world. And Mac and I have... stayed connected and we vacationed together. He came over to Hawaii when I was working there and we went back together and played the member guest. And I see him in Vancouver. He comes down to LA. He just recently got married and we're close. And I really like Mac. I always have. We hit it off the first day we met and I was fortunate to be his teammate for a while and we had a lot of fun.
What makes Mac such a good guy?
Hang on.
Oh, there we go. That's what makes you a good guy right there. Yeah. The stocked bar.
Mac has a fun, he has a great sense of humor. Like he just has this awesome sense of humor and the, some people don't get it. And he and I had, we got along from the beginning. He loved clothes. He was really sharp dressed when we played. He always had the newest, greatest clothes and he'd come in the night of the game and kind of model, what he had on. He was probably the first guy who wore different color socks that matched his tie and his shirt and stuff versus the black or brown socks. But he was a cool snappy dresser.
Yep.
Super competitive, great hockey player, loved to have a good time. So...
How bad can that be?
Yeah, no. kind of fit into my mode.
I want to marry him. Yeah. I wish I was there quicker than his last wife.
I'm getting tested on Friday to buy some more life insurance. And my insurance agent's my friend. I was at his house last week for dinner. Three couples, everyone. So it was normal.
Yeah, don't panic now. Don't give a shit about the social distancing.
As I'm leaving, he goes, next week when you got that test, maybe take 3 or 4 days off. And I go, oh, okay, I won't drink for 3 or 4 days. And he goes, no, don't have the martinis. And, you can drink the wine and stuff. So when he gave me the 3 or 4 days, so let's count back. Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday. I'm good. Monday's good. I'm good. I can have this White Claw I'm about to sip on.
Well, testing for what?
But I want to buy some more insurance.
So you got to draw blood and stuff?
Oh, fuck. They do everything, I think. They take so much blood that I might be on the couch for an hour.
Well, I'll tell you what. And before we're going to talk about a number of things today on the show, actually. So I get where we want to talk about this story of you and Kirk going to Vegas. He had mentioned it. We got a bunch of shout outs of people that we're going to give. Someone wants to know, Rusty, I thought it was a nice topic, what your dream team would be in hockey. And it comes on the heels of George Armstrong, the Chief, who was 90 years old, played 21 years in
amazing.
The NHL. Started in 1949 and retired in about 1970 or 71. The math would be right. And he stayed in hockey as a coach and a scout. But holy man, talk about accolades for a guy. They were just pouring in. And so I want to talk to you about him. I'm sure you've met him.
Yeah, I knew George.
Big blockbuster trade. Patrick Laine from Winnipeg goes to the Columbus Blue Jackets for Dubois. Anyway, these two guys were second and third overall behind Matthews when he got picked. I got lots to say about it. Also, sort of tying into there, I want to talk to you about Aaron Rodgers and his post game losing press conference yesterday to go to the Super Bowl. Do you like the All Canadian Division, Russ? Hockey's well underway. We probably had a show since it started, but and I want to find out the most trouble that you've ever gotten in.
Oh boy.
As a hockey player. I know you said some things, but they were kind of, I listened back to the shows. I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of lame. I know Russ got in more trouble than that.
Yeah.
So anyway, where was I going to pick this up, fellas, just before I launched into what we're doing on the show? What was I going to do? Oh, the, so anyway, so you got to get tested for life insurance, Russ. This is kind of funny, but it was one of the things that got me to straighten out. So I was getting life insurance a while back, a long time ago, when I was married. So I thought I better get some life insurance. And a nurse comes over to the house, right? Because they got to draw blood and stuff to check for things. And, you know, I'm saying, yeah, I smoke and all this stuff. So my premium is going to be like through the roof. Do you drink? Yeah, I drink. Do you smoke? Yeah, I smoke. Do you do drugs? Right? I said, absolutely not. Okay, absolutely not. Anyway, about 2 weeks later, a letter in the mail from the insurance company, open it up, and there's just one letter in there.
Declined.
Yeah, big stamp. Okay,
yeah.
Big stamp on it, saying, test positive for cocaine. Go see your doctor.
Wow.
Like, what? I thought I was clear. That shows you how bad you are, because really your reaction to it should be, I gotta clean up, man. I gotta clean up. And I'm going, okay, I'll do it next time, but I'll wait 7 days. Anyway, it was like, you talk about a reality check, the big stamp on the letter. And that was certainly one of the things that got me to straighten out. So I know, be careful, Russ.
Well, I could get the big D decline, but there's no cocaine in my system.
Yeah, I know. Good.
I'm a plus three. I'm a plus three drinker. I don't need any help.
Yeah, you don't need a little. You never did, eh, Rusty? Never. Good
no,
for you.
How'd you avoid it? You know what? I have not seen cocaine for years. I can't even tell you. Like that's been around maybe 20. What am I, 25? Like 25 years maybe that I've seen, or maybe less. That's not. In the last 20 years, haven't seen it a lot. You know, I've been to parties and probably seen people figured out they were doing it, but I was somewhere in the last 2 months and these guys are like, hey, do you want some? I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, you guys, what do you think, you're freaking 20? That stuff, yeah. I mean, devil's dandruff. You know.
Yeah.
As I tell all my friends and I tell my kids, I go, cocaine's undefeated. Nobody's ever beat it, so don't try it.
Yeah, it's got about a billion to zero record. Okay.
Yeah, so anybody out there doing it, stop. Or at least try.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, the other thing is,
have a freaking white claw.
Have a white claw, that's right. You will seldom find, ever, and certainly, and I was around a lot of it. You know, I was addicted to it. And you seldom see someone who is a social user of cocaine.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen. It doesn't happen, you know. So anyway, Russ, I mean, you got a young son starting out. You know, and you can kind of get duped a little bit, right? Like you'll hear these stories of guys being taken down, gambling, or drug or booze problems, right? That just rip them apart, and everyone will go, but he was so good in high school, you know?
Mm.
And it's like once high school is done, you know, it's a whole new big deal of challenges out there, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know you got a son who's going into, you know, going to be a pro hockey player. He's going to probably have a great career, but my kids now are through high school and in college, all three of them. And, it's kind of like, you can say all you want, Russ, you can give them examples of, you know, what took people down. They see it all day long anyway, right, on social media. But really, in the end, as my dad said to me, it's a lot of luck, you know. Mm-hmm. You can do everything you can as a great parent and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you sort of put your hands together, look up to the heavens and go, good God, I hope they're okay. You know, I hope they do okay. Because I'm surprised, Russ, more guys who go into the pros don't end up with problems, Russ, because of how they're pulled and tugged in so many ways from fans and groupies.
It's simple, actually. It's because it's parenting, and most hockey players have two parents at home. And that's no slight against single moms and dads raising children because of a situation, but when you have two parents at home, you have two sets of eyes on your kids. And I was listening to Denzel Washington today. You can go on, I think it's Larry Ellers had all these interviews with mm-hmm. Denzel Washington and talking about the black community and talking about, you know, the difference between him and his three friends he grew up in. He goes, one guy served 28, one guy served 18, one guy served 24. And he goes, when we were 7, we were all the same. When we were 13, we were doing everything the same, except my parents got me to go in a different direction, and I was lucky. The other three guys didn't have two parents. And so you can pretty much, when you see somebody who's having problems, you look around at who they're hanging out with, and you can kind of figure out why they have problems. And so, you know, I was lucky. I lost my dad when I was 13, but he instilled so much in me at a young age, and my mom was such a great mom. I was lucky, and I poured my heart and soul into hockey, and I made it through all the shit that was around me. And I had a couple guys I was hanging out with that my dad told me when I was 11 years old I wasn't allowed to hang out with them anymore, and one of them's in and out of jail. Frickin', and that's out of Victoria, B.C. Mm-hmm. Oak Bay, my little community. I went to Willow School, and I got in shit when I was 11. I got suspended from sports for 30 days because I got in a fight in the schoolyard. Mm-hmm. And my dad gave me the strap and then said...
Yeah, that thing was alive and well back then, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, because you couldn't get... Well, he couldn't give you the strap. He wanted the principal to give it to me, but the principal couldn't because they stopped giving us a strap at school. So he made a deal with the principal, said, if I give him the strap, and he doesn't, what was it, 30 days? I couldn't have recess, and I had to go home right after school, I think, and maybe I was suspended from sports for 30 days, but I still went to school. And that kid I hung out with, I don't want to say his name, but he is still in and out of trouble, and I have a friend that helps him out. And the other guy went through some issues, but straightened his life out later mm-hmm. on. And is doing fine as far as I know, but the one guy was bad, and I loved him. He was one of my best friends, and my dad's like, no, and I didn't talk to him. Like, when my dad said you can't talk to him, I mean, I literally walked by him in school, right, and I never talked to him again until...
Hard to do, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my thing with hockey players. There's so many blue-collar families, and... You know, it's a expensive sport, and it's hard for single parents to put their kids in an expensive game like that.
Right.
It really is. I mean, the frickin' sticks and the skates and the everything is expensive. And if you don't have, you know, the money, not that you have to be, I don't think there's a lot of super wealthy people that put their kids in sports because they want to travel to and go skiing and all that good stuff that you can do when you have that kind of money. But hockey, I think for the most part, I mean, every team in the NHL has one asshole on it, but right. for the most part, they're all raised well and respectfully. And so that's what I think.
Your buddy Kirk McLean has no sympathy for any of the parents who say if their son's a skater, if they say, I can't afford to put him in hockey. And he says, yeah, buy goalie equipment. He says, buy. Because I always said, because it's always sort of been this thing, Russ, where they go, don't let your son be a goalie. Don't let him be a goalie. Don't, because it's so tough on the parents and tough on the kid and all that stuff. And I said, why do they do that, Kirk? He says, well, one is it's so expensive. It's like, $5,000, man, to outfit your kid with equipment. I got to tell you, Rusty, you bring up the strap, and I want to ask you what you were like when you were a kid.
I was a little shit.
Don't ask. When I did the radio show with Stevie, who's listens in here, he does the editing and produces the show. We had a bit where we had my mother on every Friday morning, Rusty, to do NFL picks, and it was a hilarious bit. And she'd pick three games, and it was against the spread, and Stevie wrote out the whole stuff for her. So she would just read it. My mom knew nothing about the NFL, okay? and Stevie knows a lot about it. And one of the great things was the first time she did it, she went 11-1 in the first 4 weeks, okay?
Oh, my God.
And so there was this hilarious story about guys, they meet her and say, hey, what's your pick this week on the game? Right? She'd call me panicking. I said, Mom, just tell them they got to listen Friday. They got to listen Friday mornings, Anyway, I was, I grew up in the 60s, right, where, I was born in 1961, and in the late 60s in school, the strap was alive and well, So was corporal punishment at home and everything. Yeah. And my mom was sitting waiting to come on to do her bit, and I was carving up the Sunshine Girl, Russ, before my mom came on, and my mother hears all this while she's on hold. Mm-hmm. And then we bring her on air, and my mom goes, she was really funny, my mother. And she goes, gentlemen, because it was all scripted, but she'd go off the script once in a while, and it was gold. It was pure gold, And she said, gentlemen, you got to fire my son. That's just a terrible, terrible description of that young girl. She's got family jungle, and she's got parents and all that stuff. And good God, what are we going to do with you? And then she says, I got an idea. Don't you worry, fellas. He's coming over for Sunday dinner, and I'm going to beat him with that belt we used to crush him with, right? And everyone's going all wide-eyed, they're looking at me, and I'm going, this is great. Yeah, go ahead. And then she goes, no, you can't do that anymore. You can't do it. But God, it was fun back in the day. God.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
So, Rusty, let's start first with George Armstrong. I'll read a little bit about, for some of you younger kids, about George Armstrong. They call him the greatest captain in Toronto Maple Leaf history.
Wow.
There have been better players who have played for one of the NHL's most tradition-steep franchise, but none was Armstrong's equal when it came to being a leader of men. The Toronto Maple Leafs would be waiting in the corridor to take the ice before games in the 1960s. Teammates would invariably hear the sound of a stick being whacked against shin pads. Their captain would then look down at his legs and say, come on, you money makers. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
It was a regular bit that was equal parts inspiring and hilarious because, let's face it, the Chief, which was his nickname, his mother was Indigenous. In fact, he's from my hometown, Russ. George Armstrong was born and raised in around Sudbury and played all his minor hockey around there. The Chief was not the swiftest skater, recalled teammate Ron Ellis. George Armstrong was afflicted with spinal meningitis at the age of 6.
Wow.
That forever hampered his skating ability. But it was not near enough to prevent him from becoming a Hall of Famer and one of the greatest players in Maple Leaf history. To be sure, he was the greatest captain the franchise has ever had, wearing the C, Russ, check this out, for the last 4 championships, all the while providing a calming influence and bridging the gap in a sometimes toxic, often dysfunctional relationship between an iron-fisted management team and a group of players who were beginning to stand up for themselves. George Armstrong died Sunday in Toronto at the age of 90. 57 of those years, Russ, were spent as a player, coach, assistant GM, or scout in the Maple Leafs organization. Armstrong leads the franchise with 1,188 games, Russ.
Wow.
The active games play leader for the Leafs is defenseman Morgan Rielly, who just happens to be 664 games behind Armstrong. In order to pass Armstrong, Rielly would have to play every game this season and not miss a game for the next 7.5 seasons, which would take him past his 35th birthday. Anyway, it's you should read about him. But did you ever meet the man, Russ? He ended up living in Toronto and retired there and stayed in Toronto.
Yeah, I met him a few times and saw him around the rink a lot. Very nice, funny, and a funny guy. And I enjoyed my conversations with him. He was a great man, a great Leaf, obviously. So yeah, I saw him around there quite a bit for the 5 years I was there.
Yeah, he was actually my father went to U of T. He was a friend of my dad's.
Oh wow.
Yeah, because my dad was would be his age. Yeah, my dad was born in, so my dad was 80, would be 87. But they hung out with Tim Horton and my dad played varsity hockey for U of T and all those, they would tear tickets. You know, when you had to give a ticket back in those days and tear a ticket before they scanned them at Maple Leaf Gardens. All the guys who played for U of T. And if you read a bunch about George Armstrong, what really stood out for me, Russ, was you know humble humility when you hear it in an athlete. And it's so rare it becomes impressive, you know, when you hear a guy who's humble. And you are, and you know... Gretz is incredible that way. By the way, his birthday is tomorrow, Russ.
Yes, it is. Big 6-0.
The big 6-0, yeah. Yeah, same year as me. When you read all the stuff you're going to read tonight, folks, or read this week about George Armstrong, what really stuck out, Russ, is humility beyond humility. Mm-hmm. Every time they asked him about a goal that he scored or a record that he set. He was 12 or 13 years as the captain with the team, and what a great leader he was, and how many championships that he guided the team to. His comments always were, oh, I don't know about that. You know, I don't know about that. And he would always, at the end of all his comments, Russ, he would say, you know what, I am so happy. I am so happy that I'm getting to play this game.
And
it's the dream come true sort of deal. But I don't know about that. I don't know if I'm the guy or what. He would just completely brush it off. He wouldn't even respond to it. Mm-hmm. And always said, it's just an incredible life that I've had. And I couldn't be happier, you know, playing for Toronto or whoever he did. And I thought that was pretty amazing, you know, because it's tough to be humble, Russ, if you play pro sports, huh?
I don't think so. I think it's...
So much for that, Jimmy.
Well, no, I think that it's up to... It's the individual who they are. They are, there are, or they aren't. And so I think, you know, most good people are. I think confidence is sometimes misconstrued as being cocky. But I think it's easy to be humble and also still have confidence in what you're doing.
Easy for you.
Ha!
Yeah, easy for you. No, I mean that in a positive way. And by the way, George Armstrong scored the cup-winning goal when the Leafs last won the Cup, Russ. 1967. It's 1967, yep. How come the Leafs haven't won a Cup, Russ? Like, they got tons of dough. You know, go find some guys.
Money doesn't always buy a Cup, and especially with the salary cap now. You know, you got to stay within the guidelines of what you can and can't do. So, you know, there's so many good teams, and they have a good team. But you're right; it's and a Canadian team hasn't won it in a long time since what, 93?
Well, it may happen this year. Montreal in 1993.
Yeah,
I got Stevie's on the bit here with all the updates. That avoid Stevie. Big trade, Rusty. In the NHL this week, that we want to talk about. Before we do that, Russ, how do you like the whole Canadian division thing?
I think it's great. I think I've read a couple things that people have said and commented on. And for the asterisk season that we're having during COVID, I think it's a great idea. And I think it gives fans across Canada to see players more than they would normally get to see. They get to see McDavid. They're getting to see Matthews, you know.
Kachuk's.
Yeah, Kachuk's. And I mean, I could go on and on and on. Pettersson. There are all these exciting young players that, you know, you get to see. Let's face it, there's across Canada, there's Toronto and Montreal fans, or at least their parents were back in the day.
Right.
And they might now be a fan of Vancouver or Calgary or Edmonton or Winnipeg. And they get to see these teams more often than they were in the past. So I think it, I just think it's great. I think what sports has done, especially the NFL and the NHL, because those are the two that I follow, they've done an excellent job. And during this, I thought there was no way they were going to have sports, and they did, and we got a Stanley Cup last year, and who cares that it was in freaking August or whenever it was. Because we're all living through this crazy time together, all the scheduling and divisions and time frames are thrown out the window, but at least we have something. So I think it's, my hat goes off to everybody involved that they've done a fabulous job with no fans and putting out something for all of us who are at home. That seeing every show or movie on Netflix, there's sports, so it's good.
Do you think, Russ, they might consider this? So it's an all-Canadian division, folks, if you've been living in a cave. So they're, because they can't cross borders here. So you're going to play each team something like 9 or 10 times in Canada. I like it. Yeah. I thought it might be a little more. When I looked at the schedule, I'm like, okay, they're playing the Canadians three games here in 4 nights, in the same building, or you know sometimes they're playing back to back games for sure in the same building. I like it, Russ. Do you think they'll consider it when they get back to regular play?
No, the reason it's a good idea, bad idea. The good idea is that it's kind of fun for all the Canadian teams to be playing to one another, but the horrible idea is the travel, because it would just kick the crap out of the players and it just wouldn't be fair. They would just
Winnipeg does okay because they can go left or right for only a couple hours
and then south, right? So it's probably a lot of travel for them, but yeah, east to west is, you know, all the time would be really tough,
right? Well, you know what I thought when they did pull this off, Russ, and put it together with the 56 games and trying their best to you know see how they can make this work, putting a Canadian division together under all the protocols with COVID, I thought what wouldn't happen that they wouldn't be a bunch of trades and a bunch of movement of players because everyone gets a pass, right? It's 56 games in a very short period of time. Everyone's always talking about they might be tired, they might not. This is going to be, you know, curious to see how the fitness will be with the players and will it cause, you know, some hockey games that will become obviously a rested team against a tired team. And so I thought there wouldn't be any trades. It's like, no, we're not going to do anything. Everyone gets a pass. And then whammo.
Ba-boom.
Ba-boom. Patrick Laine from Winnipeg to Columbus for Dubois. As I said at the top of the show, they went behind Matthews, those two guys, second and third. So there's the big trade, Russ. What's interesting about this trade is I think it came from the players themselves.
Yeah.
The history with Laine was he was kind of a holdout with Winnipeg, and then word got out that he was maybe complaining a little bit that the coach wasn't putting him with good enough guys. That thing, Rusty, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be better if you put, you know, if you gave me a couple of good wingers, you know. That.
But did he not ask for a trade?
Well, he
at one point did he say I'd like to move on?
Stevie, jump in here. Did he? What was his deal?
Get our expert.
Get the expert. Yeah.
Sorry about that. I was just firing off a text. So Patrick Laine, his situation was he was disenchanted with the Jets because he didn't feel like he was a big enough part of things. He wanted a higher spot up in the lineup. He did not have a holdout per se, though.
Right. Okay. And Dubois has a big run-in with the coach.
With John Tortorella, yeah. He had a contract negotiation issue. He did not like how things went. He got a two-year deal worth a total of $10 million, but came out of it really sour and has had multiple exchanges with John Tortorella, even out on the bench.
Right. Yeah. So, speaking of going to lose their job as a host, I might lose mine to Steve. thanks, Stevie. So
you got two players that are really unhappy, and they make a trade. And so hopefully it works out for both and both teams, and life moves on. And they're going to realize when they get traded that, you know, new coaching situation and new city, and they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to play to the level that they're playing at, or much higher if they're not, you know what I'm saying? Like, if they're playing at a decent level, they're going to have to at least be there or better. And the expectations are going to be high. They're both highly regarded players. And and the good news is they're young still. So what are they, 24 probably? 23 or 24. So
we'll go with that.
Yeah, first kind of kick in the pants. You know, that was when I first got traded. I was 23 and it's a new lease on life and a fresh start and new team and all that stuff. So they'll be excited because they weren't happy. And the team, when you first get traded like that and they're high profile guys, the red carpet's going to be laid out. So there's going to be instant pressure. Like after 10 games, if they're not playing the way everybody thinks, watch, they'll be in the same situation they were in before with a different coach. So it's up to them now. They've both complained, and they're going to have the red carpet treatment for 10 days, maybe less, because the season's only 56 games. And if they don't perform, watch out.
Yeah. Well, what's really interesting about this trade, Russ, is you've got a guy who doesn't like Winnipeg who would probably tell any player, don't come here, okay? Don't come to Winnipeg. And then you got a guy in Columbus who's saying, I don't like what's going on. The coaches drive me bananas. And so I want out of here, so don't come to Columbus. But they're flip-flopping. So it might be careful what you wish for. Would you want to go play for John Tortorella, Russ?
I don't think Patrick said he didn't like Winnipeg. He didn't like the situation he was in. I've never heard him say one bad thing about Winnipeg.
Well, I'm saying he was disenfranchised with the team.
Yeah, but you said he didn't like Winnipeg.
That's, I mean, different. The team when I say that.
Yeah, but...
I mean the city.
Well, when most people say they don't like Winnipeg, they're talking about the city.
Yeah, no. Okay, well, don't yell at me, man. Okay? I'm just trying to get along. Anyway, might be careful what they wish
dad,
for.
My dad and my family are from Winnipeg. I don't want to hear anything bad
sorry?
About Winnipeg.
Where are they from?
Winnipeg.
Yeah, I heard was you. Born I was just there. Saying sorry.
I was born in Winnipeg.
Anyway, it might be curious. Would you want to go play for John Tortorella?
Well, I mean, I played for some tough freaking coaches. I played for Pat Burns. I played for John Brophy. Come on. I mean, there's a combination of torts in there somewhere. So, I mean, if you go, you got to, I mean, I just, you got to go play your best. You got to go play hard. And even though you might not like the coach and he might not like you, you both want the same result. And John is a tough coach. And He demands a ton out of each player, and he is who he is, and there's no holding back. If he's holding a personal grudge against you because he doesn't like you, that sucks. Mm-hmm. But if John's going to be hard on Russ Courtnell because he wants me to be better, bring it on. But if he's going to pick me apart and hold me back from playing more ice time because he doesn't like me, then I got a problem. So tough is, I don't think any hockey player's worried about a tough coach. It's if you get screwed over because the tough coach doesn't like you as a player and a person. And that's where I think hockey players have a hard time with. It's not the tough coach, because all coaches are, if they weren't tough, they wouldn't be in the NHL. They got to have a little bit of hard ass in them and make tough decisions. John Cooper could be the nicest guy in the world. I know there's a couple players that aren't happy with him because he has to make a decision and sit them out, and they're not happy with that decision. So now they don't like John Cooper.
There's a part of me, Russ, and I wonder if there's a part of you too. When I read the story, when the news broke about these guys, and then the rumor mill was talking, well, here's why. It wasn't that much of a surprise that both guys were unhappy in their team. People knew that. There's a part of me, Russ, that goes, why would you ever speak out against your hockey team? You're making zillions. Part of me, Russ, goes, you spoiled little shit. You know, yeah. Just shut your hole. You know,
you got your gray suit on again.
What's that?
You got your gray suit on again.
Is that management? Is that?
No.
What? What's the gray suit reference? What's that mean?
When you turn into the socialist communist.
It's like,
you know what? We have talked about this and going to, and I've done it, and I said I made a mistake when I went to the media and I regret it. But if he went to the media, it's probably because he's at the end of his rope. Mm-hmm. I don't think he had a disagreement with the coach one day and then went, I went out of here. You know, right. They treated me poorly. I think he went to the media because this has been going on and he's spreading the rumor that he wants out mm-hmm. through the media. But I don't know because I'm not there. But if a player's talking to the media after being unsatisfied, the best scenario is he can go into the coach and the GM and say, you guys aren't happy with me. I'm not happy with you. Move me. Okay? I'm admitting it. Trade me. I'm giving you the green light. Trade me. And until you trade me, I'm just going to play my ass off so that you can get the most for me. But I want to be traded. Oh. And if he did that, like Marcus Naslin in Vancouver, they Mike Keenan wanted to trade him. And or was it Brian Burke? I think it might have been Brian Burke. I don't know if Mike Keenan was there, and Brian Burke was the GM still. And they were going to trade him because Keenan didn't like him. Mm-hmm. And his agent told him, and he told the GM, he said, look, put him on the line with Messier, and he'll play better with Messier because he's a goal scorer, and you'll get more for him. And then he told Nazzy, play your ass off, and then I can get you to more teams interested. And he went out and scored two goals, and he never got traded.
That's cool, though.
Like yeah. That. Yeah. But there was an agreement there that, hey, we want to, you know, the coach doesn't like him, I'll trade him. But the GM stepped in and said, look, put him on the best line. Get him, give him the ice time so that mm-hmm. you can get more for him. Told the player to go play his ass off so he could get more teams interested in him.
Right.
And then his career took off. So yeah. Nazzy didn't want to get traded. I mean, maybe he did because the coach didn't like him. But look what can happen with good communication. Bad communication is if they had went to the media and said, Nazzy wants out, or Nazzy mm-hmm. goes, oh, you know, Mike Keenan's a hard ass and he doesn't like me. And so I want to get traded. And then everybody's upset. That never happened. It was all internal. And Nazzy has had a Hall of Fame career because of it. Mm-hmm.
It's you know what, though, Russ? I think back in that day, and of course you can speak to this better than I can, that there was more of a mutual respect for each other between player and management.
No, there wasn't that. No fucking way.
Is there less of that now, Russ, I'm saying, with the new player, the new million-dollar baby, that they're a little more lippy, they're a little more selfish.
They have so much more of a longer rope than
today.
It's just there's way more power, I'd say, on the player's behalf than back then. I mean, they have so much more.
I guess that's what I'm saying. They're a little more.
Coaches have to. You know, it's compared to, so I'm talking about guys my age that played that mm-hmm. are now in management, and they just said compared to when we played 30 years ago or 20 years ago, it's, you know, you could say it's like kid gloves. There's just,
yeah,
you know, the
bugs me though.
Yeah, but it is what it is. I think it's just that, like, we've just changed, I think, as a you know, our,
the big bad world of sports.
Yeah.
Big,
well, I think it's just in society we've changed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got to watch what you say. Like, I was surprised, to be honest, when you called George Armstrong Chief, because that's been his nickname for till the day he died. But mm-hmm. did you notice that find me an article that says Chief in it.
Well, I just read you one that did.
Okay, then I read a couple articles and they never mentioned.
Yeah, they're laying off it for sure.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, we're so sensitive. Like, we're worried about what we say, how we say it. And mm-hmm. and if I saw George in Toronto, I always said, "Hey, Chief, how you doing?" I didn't go, "Hey, Mr. Armstrong."
Right.
"Hey, Chief. Hey, Chief." Gene Ojic called him Chief. And that's his nickname. And today we still call him Chief. And there's no disrespect there. It's just, that's what it is. And I just, things like that, we're very, very sensitive.
I guess I'm falling into the person I hate when I go, "You make so much freaking cash."
Yeah. Well, don't hate. Hate's such a strong word and a bad word.
Right.
I do not like that word. It's just.
The person I dislike then. I'm becoming the person I dislike whose take is, "You spoiled little shit. How could you possibly complain about any team that you own when you're playing the greatest game in the world with the most money?"
I always go back to, it's a job. It's a job that's high paying. You know, there's some movie actors out there that make 40, 50 million or whatever. And you go, mm-hmm. how could they ever be unhappy? And how could this person, you know, Tim Cook, how could Tim Cook ever be unhappy
and not kiss the ground they're walking
but
on.
But, you know, you get to live so much more of a normal life than any of those people who are high profile, make a ton of money, and mm-hmm. they lose something by having all that. There's people who want all that. They want the fame. They want the money. But you lose things in order to get it. You lose your freedom. You can't go to a restaurant and tell everybody not to look at you and talk about you and take pictures and all that stuff. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've just, you put yourself out there, now you're a public figure. You can't do this and you can't do that and you can't act inappropriately, meaning drunk in a public place or you're freaking, mm-hmm. you know, you swore at somebody. Like,
good point. Yep.
Yeah, you give up a lot to be who these people are and make the kind of money they are. And you do not know what that person, that kid in who got traded, yeah, we don't know how bad it was. And we always think like, "Oh, $5 million a year, greatest. Oh, he's playing a sport and oh, he's young and he can have whatever he wants." But you know what? He wants to be treated with respect and he wants more ice time and he doesn't want to get shit on every day. And he'd like the opportunity to prove probably that what he can and can't do. And mm-hmm. right now he feels like he couldn't do that. And we all go, "Oh, but, you know, I mean, when I was in the doghouse when I was playing in my career, you can't sleep." I mean, you're freaking, right. You know, if you lose your confidence, you're just like rolling around going, "Oh my God, oh my God," you're nervous. And then if you couple that with a coach who's not happy, and then you say you love where you're playing and you don't want to be traded, and you're just sitting there at night going, "Oh my God, I'm going to get traded. I mean, but on the outside, "Oh my God, you're making all this money, you're famous, you're this, you're that." I mean, mm-hmm. there's a price for it. So don't be so hard and don't judge, because we don't know what it's like to be in his shoes. I mean, who knows what he's going through? And he will be judged again in the next 10 games. If you're not a fan or whatever, you should watch and see how he does. Because statistically, if he doesn't put up the numbers, he's going to be right back in the same boat he was in before. And then all the blame is going to come down on him. And they're going to go, "Torts was right for whatever he's not doing right."
Yep.
But if he goes and plays incredible and which we all want these two guys to do, we all want them to go and have success. But if one of them or both of them don't, it's all going to be on them. And now the media and the coachings and the general manager's going, "Okay, what is the problem here?" There is a problem, because we've given them every opportunity they say they didn't have in the other place. So
give
them 10 days and then you can jump on.
Well, how about this, Russ? Not only that, they can't play for four games each guy.
Oh, yeah.
Because they got a quarantine. And that's it. That's out of a, you know, they've already played, I don't know, 6-7 games already, I think. The season is probably that. Don't get me going. I'm going to leave it for now. I'll talk to you next week about Aaron Rodgers, because I think he should have just, he's pouting. He doesn't think the team's dedicated to him. They drafted a really good quarterback. He didn't, he's got some shit to say about the game, which is fine. But I wake up this morning here, you know, that I haven't really been, you know, and they're not going to look after me. Russ and I going, really?
Wow.
Really? The however long you played in Green Bay, I don't know, 12 years, something like that.
Well, there's some teams looking for quarterbacks, so.
Yeah, but don't maybe, talk bad about your other team publicly. I hate that.
Well, I never read the full article because I just probably got ADD.
Because you got ADD like I do.
So I saw his, you know, it wasn't my decision. It wasn't my decision, you know, not to go for it on the fourth down, and they kick the field goal. And
no, I don't. You're throwing everybody under the bus when you do that.
Well, no, you're throwing one person, not everybody. He's throwing the coach. There's only that the only person on his headset's the coach, so not the whole team. Even the opponents said they were surprised they didn't go for it. So now the coach has his team, his players, and the other players going, we were shocked when he just said, you know, kick, when he said kick the field goal. So it's not just Aaron, it's not one person. It was everybody who was watching the game. And I had freaking money on the Packers, and I was going, what the hell is he doing?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what the, like, when I saw that, and I had Tampa, okay?
Mm.
And I'm looking at this. Anyway, the situation, folks, is they're down 8 points with 2 minutes left. And it's you know, 8 yards, okay? Fourth down, fourth and goal with 8 yards to go. So the only play is you got to go for a touchdown. That's the only play. Apparently not. And they kick a field goal to be down by five. It just...
Yeah, five, and then they got to shut them down.
I'm trying to think of the equivalent in hockey, what that would have... What the equivalent of that is.
Well, I don't know if there is, because...
Yeah, it just...
Yeah, I don't know.
See you later, coach.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah. Stupid call.
Oh, Rusty. Okay. Let's see. What else can I ask you about? Someone wants to know, Rusty, from our shout-outs, which I'll give at the end of the show.
Hey, I had a COVID vacation after the power outage.
Uh-oh. You had to court? Yeah. You had to stay home?
No. Paris gave me a green light. I drove out to... Palm Springs, and I golfed 3 days out there. Spent some time with a couple buddies from Edmonton and Red Deer.
Oh yeah, I know those guys. I know.
And we played golf with Grant Fuhr.
Oh sure, yeah, he lives down there.
Yeah, and I lost $50 to Fuhrzy.
Well, he's good.
Oh yeah, we played this. You switch every six holes, so you have a new teammate every.
Foursomes and you get a new partner every
odds,
six holes.
They call it dots or drivers, others.
I call something. It switching partners every six holes.
Yeah. I think they call it dots. Anyways, drivers, others.
Oh, okay.
Da da da. Anyways, Fiercey had three birdies in his last six holes. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't my teammate. So we lost $50.
And he's no spring chicken and he can rip it a mile, can't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he's our age. Like, he's my age. I mean, 60-ish. Yeah. It's got to be.
We were a Bighorn, and we ran into another Canadian, Herb Pinder. Herb was out there.
Am I supposed to know Herb Pinder?
Not really.
All right. Okay, good. Rusty, someone wants to know what... I listen to how mean Russ is to you, Jungle. What was he like as a kid? He must have got the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, exactly.
I texted the guy back. I said, I don't know. What were you like, Russ, in elementary school, for example? Before we know your high school thing.
I was full of energy and a little lippy. A little
no
lippy.
No shit.
But, as I got older, I learned to... I realized that, you know, you don't want to lip off too many people, and so...
Were you a bit of a bully, or did you get bullied?
No, I got bullied a couple times. I was a small kid, so I wasn't bullying anybody. I was the same. Yeah. I mean, I did some stupid things when I was young that I regretted, and quickly learned that was not nice to do. You know, some stupid things just bad, and I learned, and then I went away to Notre Dame when I was 14, and then I definitely learned because I was the smallest kid in the school. Mm-hmm. And you could only run so far, and eventually you got to come back to your room.
Excuse me.
But I like to do things for a laugh. Like I enjoy, and I try to only tease people that can take it. And I've had a couple friends like here, older friends in the last, like maybe 5-6 years ago, I had a friend text me and goes, "You know what? If you keep that up, we're done." And I was so hurt by that.
If I know.
Oh my God, I was so hurt by it because everyone was laughing and he was laughing, but inside he was wanting to kill me. And I said, "I'm doing this just because it's fun and we're having fun." And I said, "I will never ever tease you again." I go, "That's it, because I love you. You're one of my better friends here." And I thought I was just trying to make fun. So I don't want to hurt people, but I love, you know, giving it as long as they can take it. If they can't take it, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, it backfires.
And I don't want to hurt anybody. I want to make fun. Like when we're golfing, I was chirping. Like I was chirping, chirping, chirping. Like you can't win them all. Like we win the first hole. You can't win them all, Fierzy, unless you win the first one. And da da da. You know, like, you know. And that. Anyways, just
I got attacked.
I
got attacked at the Bellagio at a blackjack table. When you talk about cutting guys up and so I was you. I think you were there that year, maybe not. But anyway, I was at the dinner. And emceeing the dinner, you know, the whole week is just fantastic. And so the closing banquet, and it's loose, and I'm having fun and walking around the room. And hockey players, that's the name of the game, right? Mm-hmm. Ripping everybody. That's the great thing about the self-deprecating Canadians that we are. We make fun of each other. Anyway, so I was ripping everyone. Got to the blackjack table with a retired NHLer was there. And into the cups a little bit. anyway, I gave him a zinger at the dinner.
Yeah,
I gave him a couple zingers at the dinner. I gave him a couple at the end of the dinner. And then when we sat down at the blackjack table, I zinged him again. And without hesitation, he got up, walked around. I was the anchor at the table. Uh-huh. He was the first hand, right? So he's in the horseshoe.
Yeah.
And he walked around, wound up, and punched me in the head.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll tell you about it after, who the guy was.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, I was, I'll tell you quickly, like...
There's no rush.
When Jeff Jackson when Jeff Jackson and I got drafted to Toronto, he got picked. He's now McDavid's agent and a great guy and a great friend. He's Lawton's agent. And when we got drafted, I was first and he was second round.
Lawton, your son, by the way.
Yep. Yeah. And we would get teased and bullied by the older players. And I would just like, my brother told me, he goes, just laugh it off and don't let it bother you. They're going to pick on you. It's part of the initiation. But Jax would get so pissed off. And the more they teased him, the more upset he'd get. And they would tease him even more. And then they'd stop teasing me because he was a easy target. And they call him Mick Jagger because he had these big, beautiful, the girls loved his lips. He had these big lips and they're saying, "You're pouting. Hey, Mick, don't call me Mick." And God, it went on and on. So I learned early in my career, don't let it upset you and laugh it off. And, you know, if you're going to get it, you can give it. And if you're going to give it, you're getting it right back. So I'm working. I'm in McKenna. There's a group of guys from Seattle that play this golf tournament and they lose a member and they said, "Let's play. We'll play as a, I think it was like a 12-some or something like that." And there's no one on the course. Private's right early when we first opened. No rules. You're just zipping around, right? So I'm playing with this guy. I'm filling in from a member who couldn't make it because you had to have a member per foursome. So there's three members and the rest are guests.
Gotcha.
So we're playing. We're on the sixth hole, seventh hole at McKenna. and it's a par three, and I put it 25 feet from the pin. Everyone's like, yeah, way to go, Russ. Ready to go, Russ. I don't know anybody in the group except for one or two guys. I don't know anybody. I've just met them.
Right.
And this guy, who now we're really good friends, John Benz, is married to Kim Nordstrom from the Nordstrom family, and they're members.
How's it going?
Right?
Yeah.
And he loves to talk, and so I line up my putt. I putt it at 12 feet, halfway.
Oh, no.
And he goes, I thought you were a hockey player and a tough guy and da da da, and you know, you hockey players are
women.
Tough and supposed to be good athletes and all this. He's ripping me in front of everybody, and I am freaking so embarrassed because I'm not a great golfer, and I don't know these guys, and now I'm sweating, and I go, I wasn't tough, and I was in 20 fights in my career, and if you freaking keep it up, I'll make it 21. And everybody there fell down laughing their ass off at him because he's always given it, right? And I don't know this. I'm just walking into these. I don't know
and
these
guys. And
you
could take it. He picked the right guy.
And they started freaking laughing. And ever since then, I've been buddies with all these guys because I gave it right back to them. And now John and I are very good friends. And all because of that. Every time he meets somebody new, he's like, I got to tell you about the first time I met Russ. He retells that story.
So you gave him a great memory. Perfect.
Yeah, perfect.
So yeah, good. No, it's backfired on me. I got charged on stage. I used to MC a comedy show here for years, and I ripped a guy, and he ran at me right on stage. So,
oh, my God.
Anyway, Russ, another show in the books. We got some shout-outs. Holly Camden and Kevin McNamara, I think he's had a couple. Mike Richardson, I think we hit before. William Dressy Man, Caps 1974, he texted me a couple times. Give me a shout out. There you go, you got two of them. Kevin Yakimovich, Kevin Gers, my buddy who's out in Camrose. He's a Boston Pizza owner out there. Hey, Kevin, thanks for listening. And you know this person, Annie Kearns.
I don't know Annie, but she reached out about her dad, who's a listener, Steve, and you can tell the rest.
Okay, Stevie Kearns, who lives in Edmonton. Okay, so she wants her father's a big listener to the show, and that's all fine. We love all the listeners. I live in
drum Edmonton. Roll.
Okay, I live in Edmonton. I've been out here since 1985, most of my adult life, with a little trip back to Ottawa for a few years. This just in, okay, Annie, about your father, Stevie, lives in Edmonton. And he's a Calgary Flames fan.
Ooh, he's been outed, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, he's been outed. Obviously, Annie, your father is not very bright, and that's fine.
You know, I hope he doesn't get fired if he's working.
Because really, Calgary Flames fans are Oiler fans with their brains kicked in.
God.
Thanks a lot, Stevie, for listening, and a bunch of other people. The other shout-out I got to give Rusty, a very quick story, speaking of Vegas, and next week we'll get you to tell about your story with Kirk McLean. He gave us the very tepid version, the very, very warm version of it, Russ. I said, Rusty will give us the real version. Dave B. Dave is a buddy of mine who listens to the show. He lives just outside of town, and I'll give you the Coles notes of this. He gets drugged when he's in Vegas. He's at a bar, and he gets roofied. Where these people are putting the roofie, I guess, is some sort of drug that they put in to knock you out and steal all your stuff. And he got drugged and fell out of a bar, off a bar stool. And next thing, there was paramedics were there. And this story just grew worse and worse and worse. He ended up going to the game the next night with his son. He was in a wheelchair, and his son, so he'd really hurt his back, Russ.
Oof.
Okay, after he fell out of the chair. They were going to the game the next night because his son had tickets, and he was in a wheelchair, and his son was ripping across the yard to get to the tailgate party in a wheelchair, and didn't realize it was dark, and then hit cobblestone with his father in a wheelchair.
Jeez.
And so then down he went. But he wanted to let us know, Russ. He reached out to me yesterday that he ended up with a broken back.
Oh, no.
Yes, and they weren't sure how it happened, but probably because he fell out of this bar stool. Fell off the chair from being drugged. But he's telling me he really thinks the reason is because he got on the plane finally a day or two later, was very tender, sitting there just trying to find a position that he could relax in, have a couple of Rabaxa sets or something. Uh-huh. And then he put on the show, the Suspendables.
Oh, no.
And he said he started laughing so hard that he hurt his back again.
Oh, no. So is he suing us?
He's suing us. Yeah, he's suing us, but he reached out to me a couple times to tell that story. So thanks a lot, Birch, for listening to the show. But he wanted to pass on that. Russ, he loves the show, loves what you're saying. He was laughing his head off and, of course, jerking his body around. But he ended up breaking his back. And anyways, he's back in good shape. So the show, a little bit of a dedication to my buddy Birch. Anyway, great to have everyone along. Rusty, what are you doing for the rest of the week now? What's happening COVID down there, Russ?
They just opened the restaurants and the gyms today in California. The governor's getting a lot of heat down here because he closed all the outdoor dining with no...
He might be the least popular governor in
the
world.
Oh, my God. They've a million. I heard today 1.2 million to petition to get rid of him. I think they need 1.5 million signatures.
Yeah.
Or to recall him, whatever. But the California, they can, because of the weather, they could have outdoor dining.
Sure.
All these restaurants spend all this money to have tents. And one guy says, you go into the restaurant inside to go outside, which is inside, to eat dinner. He goes, it makes no sense, but no, hey, we're just happy to go to our restaurants. So the restaurant owners spent all this money to have these tents and heaters, and they're letting them use parking lots and all this stuff. Anyways, then they shut them down. So that's when the real
poor people. Prop,
and then he got caught eating in a restaurant, and da-da-da. It's all the political crap that's going on, but... He just opened, so I'm sure that California, you know, it's free for us. It's cold down here right now, so they're like, oh, great. I got to go buy more heaters.
Yeah, anytime you talk about weather, Russ, you got to shut your hole, okay?
Because right now... you're in Edmonton, so...
Right now, it's minus 26.
No way.
Minus 18, feels like minus 26 with the wind chill. Anyway, hope things improve there. With COVID, they're up and down here, but... God bless everybody and try your best. And hopefully things will get back to normal.
Hopefully we'll get back to normal sooner than later.
Another show in the books, Rusty. My friend, you never disappoint. We're back each and every week. By the way, go to our website, thesuspendables.ca, and all the shows are on there. And you can begin to look at our Facebook page, the Suspendables Facebook page. And I'm doing my talking videos. I sent you one on Instagram today, Russ. Had little talking videos talking about the shows. You're gone? Did we lose Russ? Are you
out? No, I'm here.
Okay. I thought he's gone. Anyway, we're back each and every week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Rusty, have yourself a good week. And we'll be back next week with another episode of The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and Russ Corkin.
Thanks, boys.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Cortinel and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.